This morning, a suspect arrested after an explosion at a cafe in St. Petersburg killed a prominent pro-Russian military blogger. Vladlen Tatarsky, a passionate supporter of Russia's war in Ukraine, giving a talk in the cafe when the bomb went off. Tatarsky seen receiving a golden figurine of himself in this video circulating online, with Russian officials suggesting that figurine was packed with explosives. The blast killing the blogger and injuring 40 others, several still in a severe condition. Russian agents arresting Daria Tripova.
Oh, not sure what happened there. Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to Ask the Inspector. Happy Tuesday to you. This is the lightning round. We do it every Tuesday. We call it the lightning round because Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less. And today he has his security guard with him. And
I need Maverick to watch that video because Maverick, that's what we're trying to prevent. Okay, that can't happen to me. You're responsible. Do you understand your duties? Go forth.
Is that a little bit unnerving? Well, obviously, it's upsetting what happened to that individual. But as far as your trip to Russia, is that a bit unnerving?
Well, hey, for me, I mean, yeah. I'm not. Who wouldn't be unnerved by that? I mean, the bottom line is the Ukrainian government has shown that it. This is twice now. They killed Daria Dugina back last year in Moscow. Blew up her car, and now they killed Maxim Fomin. I think he used his screen name or his nom de guerre, Tatarsky. They killed him for what? For simply articulating points of view that deviate from the official narrative of the Ukrainian government. And we can never forget that this isn't the Ukrainian government acting unilaterally. Everything done by the Ukrainian government is funded and approved by the United States. So it's the American hands are covered in blood here. And, the United States has known for some time that myself and other Americans are on the Miratvorets list. I'm number one on the Center for Countering Disinformation's evil Russian propaganda list, which is, one way of putting a giant target on you. So, it's something, we've talked about before. It's something that you would be a fool not to say, hey, this is a possibility. This is something we have to be alert to. But they reached out and they touched this guy in St. Petersburg in the center, the second city, the second capital of Russia. So who wouldn't be concerned? And again, if it was just me, okay. But I was planning on bringing my daughters with me, and I have to tell you that Mrs. Ritter is not thrilled. And the daughters are a little nervous. So who wouldn't be? I mean, this is supposed to be an enjoyable opportunity, a chance to see Russia, to meet the Russian people. And now because of the actions of the Ukrainian government, there will be this underlying tension. There will be security. There's things that we can't talk about now because of this. I was hopeful to be able to talk about the schedule, which is, it'd be pretty cool to say this is what we plan on doing. Can't do that now, because you can't provide advance notice.
How does that work on a practical level, Scott? I mean, the idea of doing an event is to have an audience there when you speak. So how is that going to work now?
Well, I think the idea is to live. The idea is not to get, look, that's their problem, not mine. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think, they will do what is necessary to get the word out, but the idea of giving Ukrainian assassins a month's head start to position things and get ready, that I just don't think that's
no. I agree. I mean, I guess probably the solution will be just shorter notice as opposed to no notice at all.
Well, I don't think you can do no notice. First of all, the Komsomolska Pravda is a publisher that's in the business of selling books. Right. If the idea of having me come on a book tour is to, help sell books, you can't do that with no notice. As popular as people might think I am, it's simply not a matter of me getting a bookstore and somebody coming out going, Scott Ritter's in here. Everybody come on, line up, buy a book. It just isn't going to happen that way. But, I see what the guy is saying there. Look, my hosts are professionals. They know what they're doing, and they have provided assurances that, the you know, security appropriate to the task is going to be available, and I trust them. So I really am not worried about, you know, my physical safety. I honestly believe they aren't going to allow a situation to occur that could, you know, could do some of that. But it does change. I mean, it changes. It's a shame because this is supposed to be just this unique opportunity, this wonderful opportunity to interact. And there's going to be this cloud over it, and not because of anything I did or anything, because of what the Russian people did. It's because of the Ukrainian intelligence services, backed by the United States government, who funds them and encourages them to do this sort of thing. And there's been no condemnation by the United States government whatsoever of this assassination.
Well, it's not the first time that you've encountered risks and took a big...
Who's that handsome young guy?
Yeah, well, I guess they didn't have cameras that were any good back then. But anyway, that is in fact... What's that?
It makes me look thin.
Well, you were thin then.
That's,
well, no, you know, that's a young Scott Ritter there, our favorite weapons inspector. And you're writing a series right now on our Substack, which is at scottritterextra.com. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And this one is about your resignation from UNSCOM. And there wasn't so much physical danger regarding the resignation, but you were risking your career, your livelihood.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about that. I was warned off by the CIA and by the National Security Council that if I resigned and spoke out against the policy, that and I won't use the language, but they were going to do something to a certain part of my body, and that's the
they idea. Would make a rear entry that could be painful and possible.
An aggressive rear entry, yes,
yeah.
aggressive rear entry,
and repetitive also throughout the year.
And they the U.S. government engaged in actively engaged in the politics of personal destruction. Their goal was to destroy my reputation. And in doing so, destroy my ability to sustain myself, to prevent me from having gainful employment, which means my family's impacted by it, et cetera. So this was a war. And what I write about here is the act of resignation. It wasn't simply just writing a letter. I talk about the role played by Matt Lifflander, who's deceased now, but he was the father of a good friend of mine who I met in Russia. He helped me turn the simple act of walking away from a job into a cause that would get the support of the public at large. And thanks to him, because of this cause, I mean, look, I don't want to give away too much in the article. People should read it.
No, I'll say it was very interesting though, the way it was orchestrated with a lot of thought at a very high professional level. Yeah, you were lucky to get that.
The day I resigned, I got a front page story on the New York Times, a front page story on the Washington Post, a major op-ed written in the Washington Post by one of their leading op-ed writers, and an op-ed written by the former editor of the New York Times, one of the most influential voices, all of which were favorable to me. So this set in motion a counter narrative to what the government was trying to do to me. And so I talk about the importance of that resignation and how that helped me position for what you're going to read about next week, which is the politics of personal destruction. Kill the messenger, I call it.
All right. So ScottRitterExtra.com. Check it out. Check it out. Let's get to the questions from our beloved audience. Every question is answered in 3 minutes or less. And if not, Scott gets the whip, which is very painful. And we strictly enforce the time limit. The first question comes from the Broken Republic of Ireland. That's how Turlough Irwin describes his homestead. There is a picture of Julian Assange that has escaped Belmarsh in the last few days. The first image since his three-week extradition hearing of September 2020. Today marks his 1,000th day in Britain's Supermax. Not to equate them in any way, but would Julian be a good swap for Evan Gershkovich?
Man, look, anything that could get Julian Assange free from prison would be a good deal. But look, if I were an American official, I wouldn't do that. First of all, why would Russia want to? Julian Assange isn't a Russian citizen. Julian Assange is an ongoing political nightmare for the West. While Russia has some inherent humanity in their foreign policy, it doesn't extend to seeking to swap a foreign citizen wrongly accused of espionage by the United States, a foreign citizen who has no connectivity with Russia whatsoever, for a Wall Street journalist who was caught red-handed taking classified documents from somebody who shouldn't be giving it to him. Now, he is innocent until proven guilty. The investigation is still going forward. There's a chance the Russians will say this is all a big mistake and they'll release him. But the probability is that he's going to go to trial where he'll be charged with espionage. And the Russians, if they're going to take it to trial, they have a very high conviction rate, and he'll probably be found guilty and be given a very long prison sentence for spying. And now he becomes, a commodity that can be exchanged, but exchanged for what? I don't imagine the Russians giving him up for Julian Assange, because Julian Assange isn't a Russian commodity. The Russians are holding something that's of value to the United States. And so they'll try and get something of a similar value from the United States. And the United States isn't going to give up Julian Assange for a Wall Street journalist either. I don't think Julian Assange is on the table. He should be on the table. Morally, I'd love to see him released. That photograph the gentleman makes reference to is horrific to see. 1,000 days of hell. This is an insult to all humanity, but especially Americans and British people who should be ashamed of what their governments, their respective governments, are doing to a man whose only crime is telling the truth.
All right. The latest news is that the photos are fake. And I wanted to just let that go to just make a point that you really have to be careful what you see and believe nowadays. Scott, who's very good at getting to the bottom of the truth, apparently didn't know that. And I'm not, maybe the news that it's fake is fake, but that is.
I mean, I heard that it's fake, but I'm not, I was called a liar for telling the truth about weapons of mass destruction. So, am I going to believe something? But these aren't the photos I was referring to. I don't know what these photos are.
There's other photos?
There's a single photo that I saw of Julian Assange looking very, very bad. But it's a photo that matches, even if the photo isn't of what they say it is, let's be clear. It's a photo that matches the description that Julian Assange's wife, Stella, has given upon seeing him. It matches the mind's eye that one gets in watching the documentary Ithaca, when listening to him talk to his wife, how disjointed he is, the physical description described by his father. So it doesn't matter if the image is fake. Who the cares? What matters is this man has been in prison for 1,000 days, this man who's committed no crime, this man who exposed the United States government as a war criminal government, this man who has, been abused by the British for no reason. That's what matters. Whether that photograph is real or not is a distraction. Who cares? What matters is this innocent man is in jail.
Okay, I agree. That is more important. Harry Leuven. Harry from Leuven, I mean. I'll be okay. Do you think that high-ranking government officials use body doubles for safety concerns? Could Mr. Putin, Biden, and others have a doppelganger, continuing with our theme of fakery or possible fakery?
It was an interesting movie, The Eagle Has Landed, old World War II movie where the Germans send a hit team into England to assassinate Winston Churchill. And it turns out that the man they killed was a British actor playing Winston Churchill. Saddam Hussein was rumored to have numerous body doubles, but it turned out that a lot of what was said about Saddam and his body doubles was false. Uday, his son, did have a body double. I can't get into security issues. I don't know. I'm not a security service employee, and if I was, I couldn't talk about it. Is there a body double that physically go someplace to create the impression of presidential travel, to create a diversion for the president to go elsewhere? Could be. But that's sort of a long distance fakery that's taking place. Somebody getting into a car that you can't see, the car's driving with a body in the car, you assume it's the president, etc. What you don't have is a body double speaking on behalf of the president. When the president of any country opens his mouth and speaks, this becomes the official words of the government, and no body double is going to fake that. I think there's a lot of people out there right now, especially about Putin, saying that the Putin that they see here speaking is not the president. No, if the man opens his mouth and speaks, he's the president of Russia. Those words carry weight, and let's just drop this doppelganger nonsense.
You know, I have a friend, I think I might have told you before, she actually believes that Biden is not in the White House, that this is some kind of an impersonator, as if nobody would notice it and reveal it. Unbelievable.
The movie Dave.
Yeah. And one thing I do think they do with the presidential motorcades is you don't necessarily know which car the president is in, right? Because don't they have several that all look kind of the same?
That's the idea, is to mix it up so that, if somebody has one shot, which one do you do?
Right.
My advice is don't take the shot.
Of course, if you see a guy with fake blonde hair waving in the window, that could very well be Trump. Lyndon Payne from Scotland. As you have been a target for lies and hate for 20 or however many years, how do you manage to cope, and what mechanism do you employ to rise above it all?
Ooh, I wish I could rise above it all.
Besides drinking a lot of Diet Coke. Yeah, that's what you drink to stay awake, but how do you cope with the stress?
I have to tell you, I had more problems 20 years ago than I do today, because I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. I mean, I'll be just straight up. There's nothing you can do to me today besides kill me that bothers me. You've done everything already, so you can't do anything more. Well, you can put me in jail. Bring it on, bitches. I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. You know, you think you're going to intimidate me, scare me? It doesn't work. I can't be scared. I can't be intimidated. With the exception of maybe if you target my family, then I just get angry. But I learned a long time ago to just try to control my temper. I think anybody who's watched this podcast knows that every once in a while you can tickle me and I get angry and all that. And I'm as guilty of that as everybody else. But I think Jeff knows that I have a pretty good sense of humor.
Absolutely.
And I try to cope by having a good sense of humor about enjoying life, loving life. Not getting too serious about the issue. There's a lot of serious stuff out there. And again, if you know me, you know I'm capable of getting very serious. But I just like living. I enjoy being alive. I've learned to appreciate being alive a lot more when you're denied freedom. And so that's how I cope. I cope by trying to be pleasant, by trying to be nice to people, by trying to have as optimistic an outlook as possible, and by experiencing life. I'm getting older. We all are, Jeff. And, I'm now looking at, when I look forward, the journey forward is shorter than the journey behind me. And I realize that every day is precious, and you shouldn't spend a lot of time getting wrapped up in things that you can't control. I speak out passionately about things. I feel strong about things. I think life has to have meaning, have a purpose. And I'm trying to find as much purpose and meaning in my life as possible. But life should also be enjoyed. You should be able to relax, have fun, have a beer, have two beers. Don't drive. But, and so that's my approach. That's my coping mechanism. Basically, I cope by living. Do I do it perfectly? Nope. Do I make mistakes? Every single day. But do I let it get me down? I try not to. I just move on. Every day is a new adventure. And that's what we're doing.
When you enjoy that beer, my advice is to not enjoy it in a Greek mug with a trap door at the bottom. Just a word of advice.
Yeah, no. Well, you fell for that one. He got you. Because what I did know about that was that once it starts, once it triggers, it empties the whole cup. It's not like it just, see, I thought it was an overflow mechanism, that if you pour it in and you get above a certain thing, that it just, it'll bring out the little bit. But this is literally, if you got greedy and put in too much, it dumps it all.
You ever see like in New York City in the summer where they open up a fire hydrant and it's like gushing out. Except it was red wine.
Red wine. I'm sorry, Jeff. I know. Is there a stain on your floor now?
Well, you know, I think when all is said and done, it was a good thing, because by having to clean up the floor, my floor is now cleaner than it otherwise would have been.
Suits frivolous.
Plus, I get a good story out of it. So it's a win-win property.
You get a good story, yeah.
Yeah. Those of you who don't know what we're talking about, I was given a gift in Austin by our friend Ryan, a cop that was supposed to, what's that?
Former friend.
Yeah, former friend. And now he's a defendant in a lawsuit that I'm filing against him. And all he said was it would help you. I talked to him. He admitted he didn't know himself that it gushes out. He said he warned me that it might leak.
A leak there, Jeff.
So anyway, during the last podcast, I'm pouring wine into it, and all of a sudden I look down from the bottom of this cup, wine is just shooting out all over my floor, all over my desk. Anyway, everybody got a good laugh at my expense. By the way, getting back to coping with stress, I know that when I'm faced with difficult circumstances, that I tend to feel better when I'm fighting it. Would you say that works for you too as a coping mechanism, as opposed to just like, you know, doing nothing or thinking about it? When just by actively doing something about it?
Fighting is in my DNA. From day one, I'm the kind of guy that if you knock me down, I get up and I just keep coming. But I will say this, that my fight instinct has been softened by being married and having a family, because my fight, I'll fight all day long. I mean, I'll never quit. But you know, when we speak of quality of life issues, I have a commitment to my wife, whom I love more than life itself, my daughters the same way. Their life isn't supposed to be defined by my struggle, especially if I don't have to struggle. There's certain fights that you have to fight. For instance, my appeal. I will never stop fighting this unjustified conviction. So I'll fight that till the day I die, until I either win or I stop breathing. But you know, other fights, sometimes you just got to sit back and say, is it worth it? You know, there's a saying now, is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, am I going to be squeezing this lemon all day long? And I get three drops and I'm like, so I've learned now to take a deep breath sometimes, sit back and just say, you know, waking up in the morning with a happy family might be better than waking up angry, ready to hook and jab. So I'll pick my fights. Look, you rave the red flag and this bull charges. But I'm learning to hold up a little bit, take a little bit of a breath, take things a little bit easier. And you've seen that. We've had some things happen, cancellation of stuff like that. And I just want to go to war. And then I'm like,
you opted not to fight the 9/11 kook the last time. And then, but that, of course, that of course enraged him. He's afraid to deal with that issue.
I'm afraid. Dude, I ain't afraid of nothing. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you can't beat me. Like, there's a million people out there kick my ass in a fight. Yeah. You'll have a fight. I can guarantee there ain't no walking away from a fight. Unless it involves my family. And then I have to make a decision. Whether or not fighting hurts my family more than helping my family. And if it hurts my family more, then I'm not going to do it. Years of marriage, and most of that time she spent paying the price of my career choices. So I think I owe it to her now to make some choices that make her life easier, not harder.
Yeah, every day at the Ritter household is a new controversy, new danger.
Man, we got stuff. We got stuff. There's no boring moment. We are the living embodiment of the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, she deserves some tranquility. I agree. Our friend Fu from Chicago asks, how significant are the four new bases the U.S. is building in the Philippines? One of them is very close to Taiwan. Does it mean the Philippines will now be dragged into any potential war between the U.S. and China over Taiwan?
When I looked at those four new bases, these are very, very small bases. And I think the one that's so-called close to Taiwan, I wouldn't say it's very close to Taiwan. But I think it's a Coast Guard base where we you have the right to base a single cutter. So it's militarily insignificant. The other bases relate to training and things of that nature. This isn't like we're putting in a massive military facility. This isn't Pearl Harbor. This isn't Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. These are small little bases. Now, the United States is a lot like the camel in the Middle East. You know, sticks its nose under the tent, it's over, baby. The camel's in the tent. It's just a matter of when, not if. And the United States continuing to put these bases out there, we won't accept a permanent small presence. So if the Philippines allows this to happen, unless they dramatically reverse course as they've done in the past, these bases will grow, they will expand. The United States will seek to enlarge here, enlarge there, but it's a multi-year process. But yeah, the there is a danger that the Philippines could be dragged into a future conflict between the United States and China over Taiwan.
Leo SLU of the Victoria, British Columbia SLUs. Why doesn't Putin feel threatened by Finland's decision to join NATO? Why doesn't he start a special military operation to Finland, given Finland shares a longer border with Russia than Ukraine?
Well, because Finland has a pathetically small military of no consequence. So Finland joining NATO in and of itself, I mean, look, it's not that they don't feel threatened. The Russians said, we're not happy about this. This is why they're building a 70,000 man strong new army corps in Karelia that threatens Helsinki. Hey, Finland, you just woke up to the fact that now if you go to war against Russia, you lose your capital that quick because you can't defend it. And the Russians are going to build additional forces along the border that if there's a conflict, they will proceed to cut Finland in half and slice and dice it and all that other stuff. Finland has no chance. Russia has warned Finland that if you allow your country to be used as a launching pad for NATO, that changes the outcome. Doesn't mean Russia is going to invade, but it means Russia is going to bring even more force structure to bear, and it changes the Russian outlook. People have to remember the history of Finland. Yeah, there was the 1939 war. People talk about that, the Winter War, where the Finns killed a bunch of Soviet soldiers. But they forget how that war ended. The Soviets won. They broke through the Mannerheim line. They crushed these guys. They won. But then Finland joined the Nazis in 1941, invaded the Soviet Union, surrounded the city of Leningrad, and were part of the siege that killed over 1 million Soviet citizens in Leningrad. And when the war ended, Finland, of course, sued for peace. They switched sides at the end because the Finns are really good allies. NATO remember this, and they stabbed the Germans in the back. And the Russians let them survive. What the Russians should have done is take over all of Finland, absorb it, and kill all the bad guys and pacify the place. But no, they said, Finland, you can be a sovereign state, stay on, because that's the way the Russians operate. But you need to be, permanently neutral. Well, what has Finland done? They've joined a military alliance that's openly hostile against Russia, that seeks the strategic defeat of Russia. So Finland, understand this, you will never have a peaceful night. You will always live under the shadow of a Russian sword that's ready to cut your head off should you blink wrong. Russia's not going to invade Finland, not going to do a special military operation. If Finland is a member of NATO, Article 5 protections apply. But Finland has to understand this. If there is any conflict between NATO and Russia, Finland's dead instantly. That's their fate. That's their choice. That's the price they pay.
All right, Finland, you have been warned. Dmitry from Moscow, where would I be able to buy a ticket for your book tour in Russia? I'm not sure my currently unemployed broke ass would be able to afford it, but maybe I will figure something out till then. Now, aside from the fact that we discussed earlier that these events can't be publicized too far in advance, was it really going to be something where a ticket would have to be purchased?
I don't know how Russians operate, to be honest. I don't know if this is something there was a ticket or you just show up. I've never done something like this before, so I can't know. Dmitry, what I'll say is this. I can't give you the dates that I'm traveling because of security reasons. We already talked about this. My understanding is that the announcements will be made at the appropriate time by the authorities responsible for organizing this and securing this. If you can't make it, send Jeff an email with your contact information. and the Scott Ritter Charity Foundation will find a way to get a signed copy of my Russian book to your broke ass, okay? Because you made me laugh, and I enjoy laughing. It's part of my coping mechanism. So, yeah, just send Jeff your contact information, and I guarantee you, while we may not meet personally because the Russians, I don't know how they're going to do this, I will promise you that an autographed copy of the Russian language book will make its way to your broke-ass apartment so your broke-ass person can read it.
All right. I think
I'm just playing off of his words. I'm not being insulting. I hope it didn't come across as insulting.
No. Okay. So since there are sanctions, of course, I guess if you give somebody something for free, that's not violating the sanction. But then the problem is delivery. So I guess you're going to have to sign some books and leave it with folks in Russia so that they can send it to people.
We will work out the appropriate
mechanism. We'll figure it out, the logistics. I'm thinking it all out as we talk. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next question from Mitch in Michigan. Why doesn't Germany just say fuck you to the United States for blowing up their pipeline and causing them economic hardship? Aside from their disdain for Russia, what compels them to continue relations with the U.S.?
I have to be careful. I have an answer. And it's a good question. It's a very fair question. But I have to be careful that my answer is not considered to be frivolous or somehow disrespectful. But I'm going to say it anyways. I just want people to know that when I say this, I'm not trying to be insensitive to things. I call it the battered wife syndrome. You know, what's in it for a wife to continually be around a husband who beats the living shit out of her every day, abuses her? What's in it for her? Why does she have to continually come back? Because she feels an emptiness inside, a vacuum. Who knows? I'm not a psychologist to explain battered wife syndrome, but what we do know is that a wife who's regularly, habitually beaten by her husband will 9 times out of 10 return to that husband to continue to be beaten, knowing that's her future. And somehow she gains something from that. It becomes a mechanism of fulfillment. And that's Germany. Germany is a battered wife. Literally getting the shit knocked out of it by the United States on a regular basis. And then they keep coming back because they know nothing else. They need the United States to complete them. And it's a condemnation of Germany as a nation, the German people. I know there's people out there that demonstrate. We've seen, people do that. There's this one hell of this, this German member of parliament, a lady of Kurdish, descent who, German citizen. I made the mistake once of highlighting the Kurdish aspect, and I was accused of trying to denigrate her because of her ethnicity. She is a German, born in Germany. She speaks German better than most Germans do. But she speaks in part. My God, what a courageous woman. The things she says, it's common sense. It's what every German should be saying, condemning her government for their complicity in the attack, telling the Americans to get the hell out of her country. All Germans should be doing is following her lead. And the fact that they're not shows that they all suffer collectively from battered wife syndrome.
All right. And lest you think Scott is just posturing here, he really is a loving, affectionate person. And I have photographic evidence of the moment Scott and I reunited in Austin. Are you ready for this?
Don't do it, Jeff. Don't do it. Oh, God. I'm crying already.
British expat from Minsk, Belarus. Great to hear that your excellent and informative book has been translated into Russian. Where can I buy a copy of the Russian edition? I already have a Kindle download. Are you planning to visit Minsk or anywhere else in Belarus during your Russian book tour? Sorry, Scott. These questions were prepared before I got the news that we...
No. Look, I can say by omission that I unfortunately will not be going to Belarus during this trip, and I won't be going to Minsk. I'd love to go to Minsk. I'd love to go to Belarus, but it won't happen. I'm in the process of approving the cover of the the Russian edition, so it hasn't gone to print yet. I would imagine that by the time I arrive in Russia, that they will have printed hopefully several thousand copies of it and have it distributed appropriately. All I can say, we know who the publisher is, Komsomolskaya Pravda. I assume they have a website. And so I would imagine that you could contact that or contact your local bookstore. Apparently, this book is going to be heavily promoted by Komsomolskaya Pravda, at least during a specific period of time. Maybe they'll be like Simon and Schuster, you know, sign me up, publish the book, tour, yank the plug, dump the book, and move on. Who knows? But I'm very happy that they've agreed to they've agreed to publish it, and I'm very happy that they're promoting it. I'm very happy they're giving me this opportunity, and I would imagine that if you want a copy of the book, you'll be able to get a copy of the book, and that's that.
Okay, Arena from Frankfurt. Rumor has it that Russia received Crimea from Turkey with the condition that it shall belong to Russia as long as there's a Russian military presence there. Thus, Ukraine joining NATO would result in Turkey having a claim to get it back. How true is this rumor?
I don't know. I mean, look, I'll be straight up. I don't know. I'd have to go back and take a look at the, the agreements, because it wouldn't be a rumor. There would have to be a treaty signed between Russia and Turkey, where that was stipulated in writing. Then you have to have scholars, and legal authorities determine whether or not that treaty still, bears weight. There's a lot of treaties in the past that, even though they were valid at one point in time, aren't valid today because change of governments, change of relationships, et cetera. And so it's possible that the Soviets, for instance, when they took over, they said that these treaty obligations don't carry over. So I don't know. Then that treaty is null and void. Turkey would have to go to war to enforce it, as opposed to saying we have a treaty right to return. I can't imagine the Soviets continuing a treaty that gave the Turks a backdoor into taking Crimea back. First of all, it ain't Turkish anymore. I know there's a Tatar minority, but the majority of the people live there are Russia, and they ain't going to Turkey. So I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. Thank you for it. And we will put a semi-asterisk on it because I'm interested. I'm curious. I'm going to go dig into that, find out if there is indeed a treaty relationship. So thank you for the question.
Sergey Chicken, perhaps, from Vorkuta. Mikhail Kazin believes that from an economic point of view, the West will shrink to the level of AUKUS and will make efforts to deindustrialize China as its main competitor. Thoughts?
I mean, I don't think you're going to see the West shrink to the level of AUKUS. I mean, there's Europe, and you can't forget Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, with its links. So the West is, even though it's on the decline right now, I don't see it shrinking to that extent. And I, if anybody in the West thinks they can deindustrialize China, then they're smoking some really, really good dope, and I might have to reconsider my approach towards THC. But because
on the eve of your trip to Russia is exactly the wrong time.
By the way, Russia, I don't do drugs, and I won't do drugs, and there won't be no cannabis oil in my baggage, but or my daughter's. So we're good on that. But no, I mean, look, I respect Mr. Kazin. I'm not an economist, so I read everything with an open mind. But I just can't imagine anybody in the West having the arrogance to think that we can deindustrialize China. Although there's been some very arrogant things said lately. Marco Rubio just came out, and he decried the fact that Brazil dared to enter into economic relations with China that bypasses the dollar, and they go into direct currency exchange using the Chinese yuan. The spokesperson for the White House got on, and she basically said, any effort to walk away from the dollar as the world's reserve currency is a frontal assault on the American people and will not be tolerated, as if the rest of the world really gives a rat's you know what. They're walking away because you guys sanctioned. You're walking away because you steal money. The world doesn't have to buy into your theft, your thievery, your corrupt system. They're walking away. And what are you going to do about it? Go to war against the world? Look at the arrogance of the United States on display with the statements of both the White House spokesperson and Marco Rubio. It's stunning.
All right. Let's do one more of the questions submitted in advance. And if you would like your questions to be considered for our next podcast on Friday night, You can submit it to scottritterextra.com. When you get there, just click on Ask the Inspector, and you'll see what to do. Kevin Michalitzi is backstage curating some questions coming in live via Facebook and YouTube. And you can check out Kevin's podcast, American in Crimea. There's the address for his YouTube channel. And let's do one more question before we get to the live ones. Jeff Gadson from Washington. What's the closest known or speculated location the U.S. has placed nuclear weapons to the Russian border? This is the perfect question. I can pronounce the guy's name. The question is succinct. And those are the ingredients of a good question. Go.
Well, I'd have to get the ruler out, but the U.S. has a stock of B-61 bombs in Incirlik, Germany. Turkey, I'm sorry. So I'd have to do that. But there's a stockpile in the Netherlands. It could be close to Kaliningrad. The United States may or may not have nuclear weapons in South Korea. But if they did, Vladivostok, the Russians have a border with North Korea. That would be sort of close. So we're looking at, but also, the United States has nuclear weapons on board their ships, and their ships sail on a regular basis within 12 miles of the Russian, border. We do that in the north. We do that in the Black Sea. We do that in the Baltics. So, bottom line is we're playing a stupid game here. And the problem with stupid games is you get stupid prizes. And the dumbest prize of all is thermonuclear war. And so it would be best if the United States took nuclear weapons off of their forward deployed assets, kept them stored in a reliable basis, in a verifiable basis and deep in the rear, and not be tempted to use nuclear weapons, or not create a situation where people are afraid that we might be tempted to use nuclear weapons. Therefore, assumptions are made. And next thing you know, we're all dead.
The book that Scott will be promoting in Russia is Disarmament in the Time of Perestroika. And if you would like your very own autographed copy of it, not only autographed by Scott, but personally walked to the post office in rain, sleet, snow, hail, no matter what, dogs attacking him, he will get it to the post office.
And just so people know, I'm out of books. So all you people who put in orders and I think I think March 25th might be the last unfulfilled batch.
They're on the way. Ryan sent a receipt.
Ryan sent them. The book should arrive tomorrow, which means this weekend I should have your books in the mail. So anybody who's like, hey, I paid for the books a while back, they haven't been mailed yet because I simply don't have books physically in my possession anymore. When the books arrive, this hand with this pen will sign the book, and then I will put it in an envelope over here. I will make sure it's all filled out appropriately, and I'll walk it to the airport. Well, I actually drive big box full of books, and I'll spend an hour and a half in line as they put the postage on each thing, and they'll be mailed out to you. So you should be getting them sometime next week.
Well, maybe not if you go to the airport, as you just said. I think you got to go to the post office. But
you're right, Jeff. You're right. I have to go to the post office.
And there's no shortage of inventory on the t-shirts. Ask the Inspector t-shirt. Uh-oh. There you
Does that
have
mean
it.
We're not moving product?
No, it doesn't. It means that we're not out. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah. They make them when they're ordered, so that's no problem at all. Same address, scottrittermerch.com. And you should not have had that whip. I apologize for that whip.
That hurt. That hurt.
See, look at Arkady treating us to a $50 donation. The great attorney Arkady Itkin out of San Francisco, California, the feces capital of the world. Thank you, Arkady. Incompetence and reluctance to learn valuable lessons from our mistakes are a bad combination.
Okay, incompetence and reluctance to learn valuable lessons from our mistakes. They are a bad combination. Yes. Incompetence and reluctance. is a bad combination.
Okay. For $50, we have to try to at least figure out what the hell.
No, Katie, we didn't graduate law school. Don't give us a Stanford law constructed sentence, okay? You got to keep it simple for the Marines.
Arkady was on our Sunday podcast this past weekend, and he's coming back.
I heard a lot of good things about it too. Yeah,
everybody. Oh, good. He's great. Did you know that he's not only an attorney, he gives dating advice? This is like a thing that he's cultivated over the years.
I bet you didn't know that. Did you get some dating advice?
Yeah, well, not personally for me, but he gave dating advice for, you know, to apply to people in general. He's really good.
Okay.
He's really. Remember Loveline?
Does he do marriage counseling?
Same thing, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Relationship. Maybe we should call it relationship.
Relationship management, yeah.
Remember Loveline, Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla? Did you ever see that show years ago?
I know the name, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's that level. It's real. It's funny, but it's also actually good advice. He's great. We're going to have him on regularly. All right, let's take some more live questions from Valley S. Thank you for your donation. Please look into your crystal ball and tell us the eventual outcome of this Trump mess.
Look, this is insanity, what's going on. I mean, oh, I brought the crystal ball up and I screwed the camera all up.
It's all blurry now. It'll get back. It'll settle itself down.
I apologize for that, guys.
It's like you're dealing with a person. It's like when you're dealing with a person, you upset somebody, you just need to calm them down. They'll be okay in a few seconds.
Okay, calm down. You're right. Yeah. Is that Arkady's dating advice for cameras? I don't know what's happening. I mean, I know that Trump's been indicted. He's supposed to go get processed. I don't know what's going on in the streets of New York right now. I think that, I mean, look, we're wrestling with some conflicting issues here. No person is above the law. Let's just be straight up about that. There's nobody above the law. And if a law has been broken, the authorities have every right to prosecute the people who have broken the law. But the motivation for prosecution must be driven by, I believe, a genuine desire to do justice, meaning that a wrong has been committed that requires resources to be expended to bring justice about. Prosecutors have a wide discretion to prosecute or not prosecute. Every day they let guilty people go, because what's that? Remember, the juice ain't worth the squeeze, baby. Yeah. And so with Trump, this is just the dumbest thing in the world. It's already been resolved. He already made the payoff. This is pure political vindictiveness, pure political vindictiveness. It's the same thing about what's going on in Georgia and everywhere. They are looking for any excuse to haul this man before a court to create the impression of a criminal that is unelectable to the American people. But here's a news flash, you morons. You're making him more electable. The more you do this, the stronger his base comes, and the worse the idiots who are doing this. But if you believe turning on CNN, listening to the lunatic fringe out there gloating about how they got Trump fingerprinted and all this kind of stuff.
It's pornographic.
Yeah, you're creating
the degree of ecstasy they feel about this guy being punished for not even committing a crime is pornographic. No. And it endangers us all, I think. I mean, in other words, if they can get Trump, they can get anybody.
Oh, that's what people don't understand. Look, there's a book written a while back, but the idea of the book, I can't remember the title of it, but I think it was called A Felony a Day or Six Felonies a Day or something. But the premise was, the government, the way they structure laws and such, they can charge any American any day with several felonies. That whether you know it or not, you are committing several felonies a day. And the only way you can say that I don't is if you totally lock yourself up in a in a closet. But even then, there might be a federal law that says if you lock yourself up in the closet, you've committed a felony, because that's the way laws work. They're all out there. It's designed for the authorities to control the public. We're not in a free society. We really aren't. They can selectively pick people out and bring hell down on you. Let me give you an example. Okay, so if you think that you can avoid, if you can piss off the government, just walk away, you can't. And Donald Trump has pissed off the government beyond belief right now. and he's pissed off mainstream media. He's pissed off the liberal establishment, and they're coming at him. But the beauty of the Constitution is when it comes to president, there's only two things. Above 35 years of age, I think the geriatric has that one in order. And natural born American citizen. I think he's got that one too. He can have 26 felony convictions. He could commit murder. He could commit any crime. And if enough Americans say that's who we want as our leader, he's going to be the president of the United States. And you morons, this is a guy who actually comes out and says, you know, I am your retribution. Do you think he's bluffing? Do you really want a civil war in this war in this country? You guys are dumber than dirt. You should ignore this guy. You should leave him alone. You should let him fester and all that stuff. All you do is empower him right now because his base doesn't care about any of the details in the indictment. They don't care. They're not going to read it. They're just going to say this was wrongful. They're going to rip it up and toss it. So, yeah, that's where I stand on that.
We were talking about Trump's eligibility on Sunday on our other podcast. And, you know, we made the point that if he's of a certain age, he's a U.S. citizen. So that's all that matters, even if he's convicted. And I said, theoretically, even if he's in prison, he could still be the president, although it may not be the best way to serve the country. And then Satori said, would the Secret Service be put in prison, too?
They'll be sitting outside the stage. Things.
Yeah.
And you send the book to England. Thanks in advance.
Coming. Yes, we're gonna work that out. Anywhere that shop that's legal to send it, I think we'll be able to do. Scott Ritter, that's you, Scott. Do you know anything about the latest bombings in Syria?
Oh gosh, the latest bombings. I mean, because Syria is bombed daily. The latest American bombings. The latest Israeli bombings. I think the Israelis have most recently bombed Syria. I don't know the targets. My understanding is that Israel is targeting locations that have an Iranian presence. The idea is to inflict casualties on Iran, to deter Iran, and to punish Syria for allowing the Iranians in. But I haven't. I apologize. I probably should be up to speed on that, but I'm not as up to speed. I saw some brief mention of it. Normally, I would do a deep dive when I see that, but I have been distracted by other things. So, like Tarski being blown up and whether or not I'm going to be going to Russia and do I want to put my family in harm's way, that kind of stuff.
Plus, the news media is dominated by Trump's arraignment. So, you know. That would be
I'm not even watching that. I'm just.
If you were, that would be another roadblock to information. Why would NATO? That's you're talking about people being as dumb as dirt. You know, Trump is, you know, as Scott Adams said, an energy or an attention monster. So his detractors were actually getting some ground by kind of icing him out, ignoring him. Yeah. But this is impossible to ignore. Even the people who want to ruin him aren't ignoring him. And it's like, he thrives in this kind of a situation. Absolutely thrives.
Never wrestle a pig in the mud because the pig loves it.
The king of metaphors strikes again. Where do you get these? Why would NATO not just take this war to the water?
To the mattress.
Block commercial ships and sink the Navy or try?
Well, when I take a look at Russia, sort of a giant landmass. A lot of its trade is done overland with China. I don't know where NATO is going to start sinking ships. And remember this, the closer NATO gets to the Russian coast, the more vulnerable they become to Russian anti-shipping missiles. So whose navy is going to get sunk? Now I flip the script on this and I take a look at NATO vulnerabilities. NATO, in order to, you know, do trade with the United States, has to cross the Atlantic Ocean. So, God, you want to take it the water? You don't think Russia has submarines that can go and sink all of our commercial shipping, sink everything that Europe's trying to send to China, shut down the Suez Canal, make it impossible to go around the South African Cape? You know, the vulnerabilities are greater on our end than their end. I don't think NATO wants to take this war to water.
All right, let's do one more question. Kevin Michalitzi backstage making it happen with his curational wizardry. Greetings, gents. Anything Scott can say about the George H.W. Bush carrier strike group in the Mideast?
It's a U.S. Navy carrier strike group built around the George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier that has an air wing complement comprising a bunch of FA-18 Hornets. I don't know if they have any Marine Corps F-35s on board. They have the potential of projecting power to the maximum range of their their onboard aircraft. They have limited ability of self-defense against anything but a concerted attack. And if they get too close to the Iranian shore and initiate combat against the Iranians, they'll all be sunk. That's what I can say about the George Herbert Walker Bush carrier battle group.
All right. That does it for this week's episode of Ask the Inspector. I just want to point out that Trump's indictment was unsealed just a few minutes before we started this podcast, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not there's egg on our face, because you never know. But I'm going to predict there will be no egg on our face, that even though we didn't see the or know what was in the indictment when we were making our comments, I'm going to predict we hit the nail on the head. It's possible that they really got him on something, but I doubt it. So let's check out the news and join us Friday night for the loquacious version of Ask the Inspector at 8 p.m. Eastern time. We call it the loquacious version because Scott answers each question much more extensively. We hang out for a good 2 hours. I sip wine or take it off the floor, depending on where it lands. And the audience is invited to join me. Adult beverages are optional, as we say. Our other podcast is Sundays, Scenes from the Evolution with Kevin Michalitzi and Tori Mansfield. And Kevin, when is your podcast on? Is it a specific day and time, or is it just whenever the Crimea?
It's Saturday mornings, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern, and 7 p.m. Moscow.
All right. We have so much to promote. Speaking of which, there's Scott's autographed book at scottrittermerch.com. And also the t-shirt. All right, Scott, take care of yourself. Be well. Love you. Thanks for the hug. It was, should we take one more look at the hug? Come on, why not? There it is.
Oh, man.
That's beautiful.
The tears.
All right, everybody. All right.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you on Friday.